Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for those who are finally pregnant and parenting after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying with multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, I became finally pregnant in 2018, and I'm now finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. This season of the Finally Pregnant podcast is sponsored by Melio. Melio offers blood tests before, during, and after pregnancy, from non-invasive prenatal tests to general health checks, helping you and your family take control of their health. All Melio tests are conducted by trained professionals at locations throughout the UK, with the results sent directly to your phone or laptop. Plus, every test comes with a personal health report from a Melio doctor. Melio. The more you know about your health, the more you can do about it, and the best source of knowledge is your blood. To find out more or to find a location near you, visit meliohealth.co.uk/health-pregnancy. There'll be a link in the show notes. We've also recorded a bonus episode of the Finally Pregnant podcast with Melio doctor Donna Fullerton, where we take a closer look at non-invasive prenatal testing. Check out that bonus episode in season 4 of the Finally Pregnant podcast, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Hello there. How are you doing? I tell you what, there is a whole lot going on here right now, and this heat ain't helping. But, you know, one of the things is that Ren has found a new phase of toddler tantrums. Oh, yes. My goodness, has she found her voice. Fortunately, in some ways, we are pretty much isolating due to my fertility treatment. So, like, Ren goes to nursery, but mostly other than that, we're at home, which means that it hasn't happened yet when we're out and about, something I'm very grateful for. But I dare say our neighbours have heard it. So just in case any of them listen, sorry about that. Oops. It started over the last couple of weeks, and we've just found that if she doesn't want to do something, which right now appears to be most things, she really puts her foot down, and if pushed, she absolutely loses it, bless her. Her cry turns into a scream at the top of her voice, and she lashes out. And I feel like she knows that she's doing it as well. She's really pushing boundaries. I'm going through various ways of dealing with it, from trying desperately to ignore it while obviously keeping an eye on her, putting her in the corner, which is kind of the doormat by our front door and is essentially, I guess, a naughty step, but we haven't called it that. And also I've tried just sitting with her while she calms down, which especially in this heat just feels like the right thing to do because I can tell that she's in distress. It has meant that she's kind of been hitting me, lashing out a bit, not hard, but it's, you know, it's not ideal. But then she realizes that I'm not going to react, and it does seem to have the best results and kind of calm her down the quickest. So, you know, we'll keep working through it. And to be honest, I'm totally here for the phases, but her timing is bloody terrible because we are right in the thick of treatment and I could really, really do without it. But it's all a phase, people. It's all a phase. So on to treatment. Well, I'm going to let you into a little secret. And this is not a pregnancy announcement, just FYI. Something that I'm not sure if I'm going to share elsewhere, I'm going to tell you now. And I don't know. Some days I want to, some days I don't. So I'm going to do it. And then it's done. And I can decide whether or not I want to share it over on Instagram. So it might have slipped out by now. But anyway, we're in our 2 week wait. Ooh, our very final 2 week wait. And everything has gone really well so far for our treatment. And for those of you who are new around here, just to let you know, we spent 7 years trying for Ren. When we had the round that gave us Ren, we had one frozen embryo left, and it's a day 5 blastocyst. And we have spent the last kind of year or so deciding whether or not we were going to transfer it. And we made the decision to do so. So that little embryo is inside now. Oh my goodness. So yeah. The wait has really started. What's interesting this time is my approach. Last time I definitely went in with, you know, like if it's going to work, it's going to work. It was a one for luck round. I was fully sure that it wasn't going to work. And let's face it, chances are always against us, but especially with our ages and that kind of things. But, you know, so this time I'm doing that as well. But I've also decided that I'm just going to enjoy it, which sounds really weird, but it's our last ever 2-week wait. And yeah, I just think that I'm going to give it a go and try and enjoy it. Now, I'm recording this quite early on in my 2-week wait. So give me a week and I will probably be tearing my hair out. But currently, this is my attitude and I'm here for it. I have, yeah, like I say, decided I'm Poopo, which is pregnant until proven otherwise, for anyone who has not heard of that acronym. And honestly, we love a good acronym, don't we? And yeah, that's how it's going to stay. Why not? Why not? As you've heard me say, that is not going to be edited out. That is my injection alarm. So I'll do that as soon as I finish recording this. Honestly, the life of a fertility patient. Anyway, as you may have heard me say before, if I'm going to fall, I'm going to fall hard. You know, I know that if it's not going to work, it's going to be hideous. But I don't know, you know, like the worst thing about this one not working is that it is our one and only hope of Ren having a sibling. And that's going to be heartbreaking if it doesn't work. But what if it does work? Do you know what I mean? Like, I know that you guys will be there to support me if it doesn't work. And I also know that if by some miracle it does, then you'll be there to celebrate with me if and only if you have the capacity to, depending on what's going on within your world. Because I get that not everyone is able to celebrate with people, even though they know them and love them and care for them. Sometimes it's hard and that's okay. It really is. I know that I will have so much support either way. So I'm in my 2-week wait. And I am going to enjoy it. Yes, today I am pregnant. And I have actually even been listening to my meditations, my pregnancy meditations, which, like, I created them because I had an original fertility treatment one. And what was missing, I felt, was a meditation that took me all the way from trying to visualizing holding my baby and like in the delivery room and then bringing them home. Like, I wanted to see that whole journey when I was thinking and dreaming and taking that time out and that space to think about it. And subsequently, I created a pregnancy affirmation. So it did all of that. So I've been listening to them. I've got a 5-minute one and a slightly longer one on my website. I'll put the link in the show notes. But yeah, I've been listening to them and just, yeah, today I'm pregnant and we'll find out soonish whether or not I actually am. But you know what? It makes me feel good. It really does. So yeah. Yeah. Anyway, on to today's show, where I am chatting to Tiffany Norris, who is the one and only mummy concierge. There is lots to say about Tiffany. She has a fantastic job, which you can read all about in her new book, Secrets of the Mummy Concierge. Honestly, it's good fun. It really is a good fun book. And it's lighthearted. It's got warm tales about her experience with the rich and famous, no names though, sadly, alongside some of her own experience, which include things such as postnatal depression, as well as important tips and lists such as how to deal with gender disappointment, which is something I actually want to do a bit more work on, to be honest, and embarrassing things every pregnant person worries about but rarely admits to. Tiffany went through her own TTC journey, although fortunately fell pregnant naturally in the end. I know that having a natural pregnancy can be a tough thing for some people to hear, but I also know that others struggle with it because a natural pregnancy can come with guilt, which it totally, totally shouldn't. Like, we all have heard about survivor's guilt, you know, and it shouldn't happen. It really shouldn't. But having spoken to lots of people, I know that it does happen. And along with a feeling of not really knowing where you fit in comes with that, I guess. And I'm here to tell you here and now that if you are pregnant or parenting following a natural conception, but one that didn't happen as fast as you'd hoped, or happened after treatment or loss, or anything that means you know what it feels like to want to bring your baby home, but it hasn't happened, then you belong here, okay? You belong on this podcast. You belong in the hangout. You belong at the yoga and Pilates sessions. You belong over at my Instagram, and you belong with me. And don't let anybody, and I know that we are often our worst enemies in this, so I'm talking to you, don't let anybody tell you any different. Right. Stepping down off my soapbox for a minute. When I spoke to Tiffany, she was heavily pregnant. She was in her final trimester. But if you head over to her Insta page, Mummy Concierge HQ, where there'll be a link in the show notes, you'll see that she has just recently brought home her third little miracle. And what a beauty she is. Before I go, your weekly reminder to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast wherever you listen. I really, really love hearing your feedback. And someone said from last week's podcast, which was my episode with Nikki about racism, I've just listened to your podcast with Nikki this morning and found it really interesting and moving. So thank you for sharing that conversation. And about a previous episode that I did with Alex Holder, listen to this episode today, a really interesting and insightful chat. The privilege of being able to afford fertility treatment is something I acknowledge, but not always fully. I can't imagine the additional sadness that must come with not being in the position to at least have a choice. So yeah, I just love hearing your feedback. So please do send it in, whether it is an email, whether it's commenting on the post or the reel, or I would love it if it was a review. Do you think I bang on about that enough? Come on. Come on. If you haven't done it yet, why not? I know that I'm saying this to people on Apple. I'm talking to you specifically, unless you know that you can leave a review wherever you listen to your podcast. Anyway, right. I'm going to shut up basically now and we can get on with the show. Take care. Bye-bye. In addition to this podcast, you'll find lots of other support for the wonderful Finally community over on my Instagram at Trying Years and at catstrawbridge.com. Examples of that support include the Finally Pregnant yoga and Pilates courses and a wonderful community called The Hangout. When you join The Hangout, which you can do whether you are pregnant or parenting, you'll receive a free meditation, access to 24/7 support, invitations to monthly speaker sessions and support groups, discounts, and lots more. Find out more about all of the support available to you at catstrawbridge.com. There's a link in the show notes. Welcome, Tiffany. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to have you here. And you've just told me that this is your first ever podcast interview, which I probably shouldn't have said right at the top, should I? Because I really, really don't want to make you nervous. It is just a conversation and it's going to be fun and it's going to just be really, really interesting because, or the reason I know that is because I have read your book and I follow you on Instagram and I just have found everything really fascinating. So if you could first and foremost tell the listeners who you are and what you do, that would be amazing.
I can. So, well, I'm the UK's first mummy concierge. And lots of people say to me, well, what's a mummy concierge? It's a job that essentially I invented, but thankfully it's done really well. So I am there from the moment that that line sort of says, yay, you're pregnant, right up until, well, you know, school age children, if needs be. I've been described a little bit like a PA for parenthood. So rather than you sitting there when you're pregnant, Googling everything and thinking, oh, do I need to book a sleep trainer or how do I potty train or, you know, whatever it might be that's making you anxious, you get on the phone to me. And if I don't know the answer, I will know an expert who does, basically. So I just sort everything out for people. I mean, I think the majority of my clients tend to be sort of wealthy clients. I've worked with members of the royal family. I've worked with lots of celebrities and things like that. So you have that very sort of extravagant sort of clientele that want quite outrageous requests, which I'm sure we'll talk about at some point. But I also do just work with your average mummy and daddy, lots of first-time parents, just to help them and make pregnancy a pleasurable experience rather than a sort of anxiety-ridden one.
Brilliant, brilliant. And I love that you made that up. I love that kind of entrepreneurial spirit. And it's just, yeah, it's fascinating reading the book and learning kind of where it came from and how you built the business up. So like, huge congrats to you for doing that.
Thank you.
It's just, yeah, like you say, when you get pregnant, it's a minefield, isn't it? And many of my listeners will have been through a pretty long and often traumatic journey to get to that pregnancy. And unfortunately, I know that you went through your own journey, didn't you? So you must, like, the whole pregnancy and parenting arena must be a really interesting space for you. Interesting does not feel like the right word, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So if you could tell us a little bit about your own journey, that would be really great.
Yeah, of course. So before I was working as a mummy concierge, I was actually working as a journalist. I used to write for lots of the women's glossy magazines, so sort of Grazia, Company, Cosmopolitan. And I just got married to my husband, and an email pinged into my email box basically saying, oh, would you like to write an article about a service that a fertility clinic was basically offering, which was called a fertility MOT? And the idea is that you just go along and they just give you a bit of a once over. And basically, you know, you would hope that they would say, yeah, brilliant, everything's fine, you know, off you go, and you can start trying for babies whenever you're ready. So it felt to me like a sensible thing to do. I thought, you know, this sounds like a really lovely service and I should write about it and encourage women to do it, et cetera, et cetera. So off I popped to this fertility clinic in London. And they did a couple of tests. I wasn't nervous in the slightest. You know, babies, I knew I wanted babies. I didn't want them instantly because we'd literally got married, I think, 2 weeks beforehand. And it was quite horrifying, really. They basically came back to me and said, I think you need to do IVF. And it was just this absolutely sort of shock. You know, I was like, what do you mean? We haven't really done any tests. And how do you, is it me? Is it my husband? What, you know, what's the problem? And so, you know, obviously being a journalist, I insisted that maybe a little bit more research was done. So we started on this sort of path of, I had various sort of invasive treatments. I had my fallopian tubes flushed. But all along, I felt like this particular clinic were just very much, let's just start you with IVF. Every single time at the end of each appointment, I was handed an IVF leaflet and suggested that we start. So obviously, my husband and I are in a bit of a quandary because we weren't even thinking at that stage of starting for a baby. But the anxiety just immediately, you know, once you're told maybe this isn't going to be so easy, you start to panic. So I had, as I say, I did a couple of sort of treatments with this one fertility clinic and started to feel a little bit apprehensive going forward with them because I just didn't feel there was a trust element there. So having spoken to a couple of friends that I knew who were also going through fertility treatment, they recommended an expert at another hospital in London. And I went to see her and, you know, she said, okay, this is interesting. You know, you haven't really even started trying yet. You know, why don't you start trying and we'll just see what happens. So the long and short of it is we did start trying earlier than probably we expected. Nothing happened. We automatically had that anxiety in our heads. Suddenly I became obsessed with peeing on ovulation sticks and eating the right thing. And, you know, and I started to get resentful whenever friends called me up and said, oh, I'm pregnant. And it all just became all consuming, you know, in my head. So we probably started doing things earlier than we should have, to be completely honest. So I was put on Clomid, you know, I had to do the sort of daily injections, all things like this. And it just was all encompassing. Ultimately, I guess the highlight of this story is that, you know, we had started doing so much that it was suggested by this new expert that maybe we did want to try IVF. So this was almost 4 years later. So it was a long old time. And we thought, right, we'll register on the NHS because obviously doing it privately is incredibly expensive. And the NHS, you know, our first appointment, we weren't going to get for 6 months or something. So we said, you know what, we're just going to take a little bit of a break for 6 months. We're going to go on holiday. We're going to do all those annoying things that people say to you, you know, just relax whilst you're, you know, we thought, right, we'll try that because we haven't tried that yet. And lo and behold, it's one of those stories I almost feel guilty telling people because, you know, a lot of people that are trying, I know I used to find it incredibly frustrating. But the day before we were booked to start our IVF treatment, I found out I was pregnant. So, you know, it all resulted sort of in a natural pregnancy, I guess, and we didn't have to go through that final stages. But, you know, I think that's not to say it wasn't as tough. I mean, it was 4 years of anxiety and doubt and questioning your future and all things like that. So we got our happy ending, which is lovely. But, you know, it was tough.
Oh, without question. Like my kind of, I don't want to say mantra per se, but it's if you are wanting to bring home a baby and it's not happening, you know, whatever you are going through, however that whole journey is shaping up, it's not giving you what you want. And so you know, and you understand the grief of getting a period every month and, you know, like the baby that you hope you'd be expecting that month and building a life for them and creating the memories. And, you know, so it isn't about length of time or what treatment. It's just like you mentioned, all of it is really quite all consuming and it's hard to relax in your normal life. Never mind kind of go away and relax and have sex and it will happen kind of thing. It's a really, really, really difficult time. Now, you mentioned there like about guilt, and I have heard this before where people have been having treatment and then, you know, and you do hear it and, you know, I've definitely been one of those people that's rolled my eyes and thought, oh, you know, I'm thinking, I wish that had happened to me. But you mentioned that you did have a spontaneous, like natural pregnancy. Talk to me about the guilt around that, because I hate that people feel guilty because of all the reasons I've just talked about. You've already been through much, but how did you process that?
It was really hard, actually. I remember one day going out for lunch with a friend of mine who I knew was going through quite intensive fertility treatment, and they ended up having to get an egg donor and things like that. So they had a really, really tough journey. And she actually said to me, oh, I hate it when people try to tell me that they've been through fertility treatment and then end up having a baby naturally. You know, that's not what it is. And I remember sitting there and thinking, oh, I don't know how to react to that, because I completely know how you feel, you know, right up until the obviously getting pregnant. You know, I've been there, I can completely understand. But I guess because I got pregnant naturally, it's very easy to think, well, you're fine now, you know, you've got your baby, you're one of the lucky ones. You know, quite often people will say to me, and I guess now that I've written a book, people will know the truth, but people just presume that we had our baby naturally and it was all very, very easy. And every now and again, I sit down with my husband and say, my goodness, you know, God, do you remember I did actually have to inject myself all the time and I did have to take these hormones and I was taking tablets that were making me look 6 months pregnant when I wasn't. And I mean, it does, it feels slightly like a different lifetime, because obviously now I've got children running around and I've been exceptionally lucky. But I think, you know, the ultimate aim of everyone in the end is to get pregnant. You know, if you want to have a baby, the ultimate aim is to get pregnant. And how you get there, you know, it's not a competition. It's nothing like that. And I think it's just dealing with that guilt is hard, but you do have to recognize that no matter what sort of fertility treatment you've gone through, no matter how long you've done it, it doesn't matter if you've had a friend that's been doing it for 10 years or, you know, or if you just had to go through it for 6 months, it can still be as draining and as hard and as difficult. And I don't think you ever truly get over it, to be honest. You know, it's exceptionally tough. And you know, I pray that everyone listening to it ends up getting the baby that they want, and it just might take a little bit longer. So yeah, but the guilt is definitely hard.
Yeah, and I hear so many people talk about that, and I always feel a little bit headmistressy when I say this, but I always, you know, I think, well, think to yourself, if you waited another year or it took an extra 2 years, or would that be okay? And the answer is, you know, like it's the right time for you now. If you're pregnant right now and when you were pregnant, and I know that you are pregnant currently as well, which is amazing, you know, then that is the right time for you. And it's not about the guilt. Perhaps what it's about is how you channel and support people who are still going through it. I don't know. That's just my thoughts on it.
Yeah, I agree. And also, to be honest, when I think back through my sort of fertility treatment, I mean, I was so desperate. Aside from doing, you know, all the medical sort of side, I actually went to see a fertility hypnotherapist. And that was sort of quite eye-opening in itself, because whether this is true or not, whether it helped, I have no idea. But at the time, my career was going incredibly well. I've never thought of myself as a career woman. I've always thought of myself as a mummy. That's what I wanted to be. And when we actually delved into stuff, she said to me, you know, are you worried that maybe if you have a baby, it might uproot, you know, everything that you've achieved in your career and stuff like that? And it was something that I'd never thought about. And then I thought, oh, maybe am I almost sort of blocking this opportunity because I'm worried about something? So like you say, you never really know the whole story of anyone that's going through fertility treatment. You never really know the background. And sometimes you learn a lot about yourself throughout it as well, which I think is really important. And I think it's hard without a doubt, but I think in the end, when you look back on it, you will probably find that, you know, you've learned stuff about your relationship with your partner, you've learned stuff about yourself. And it sounds awful me saying try and find a positive, but try and find a positive. You will probably find that something has come out of it that might be a positive, and hopefully that will be the gorgeous little baby at the end of the line, you know.
Absolutely. I completely, completely agree. And I know that I am more empathetic, more understanding. I know that I am now in touch with an incredible community of people via Instagram predominantly. And I'm so grateful to have them in my life. And I know that I have got my beautiful daughter, Ren, and it was hideous, much of it. But I completely agree with you. Where we can, it is about focusing on the positives without, yeah, you know, toxic positivity and all that, but just bringing out the good stuff, because yeah, there has to be good stuff. Please, please, I hope that there is good stuff for people.
Yeah, there has to be.
So sticking with that time just a little longer, you find out you're pregnant, you're just about to go on holiday, which sounded wonderful, by the way. And how was that pregnancy for you?
Oh, I was a nervous wreck, an absolute nervous wreck. I immediately did the typical thing of sort of joining all of the, you know, baby forums, you know, on every app going. Every single pregnancy symptom. If I was expecting to have morning sickness, I would have morning sickness, but then be absolutely paranoid that it wasn't morning sickness and that there was something wrong with this baby. Sorry, excuse me. And, you know, it was incredibly anxiety ridden, because I was also very nervous about, well, if something goes wrong with this pregnancy, are we then going to have another 4 years of trying? And, you know, the same thing happened when my husband and I discussed having a second baby a couple of years later. One of our main things was, well, do we even want to start trying? Because if we do, and then we have to go through what we went through again, like, do we want to unsettle ourselves? Do we want to put ourselves through that stress again? So actually the decision to even start trying for a second baby was awful. You know, we had to have some really quite brutal conversations because we were so scared and so scarred by what we'd been through beforehand. So yeah, you know, it definitely wasn't easy, that first pregnancy. And I think that anyone that really, really wants something, when you're very close to getting it, you're going to be anxious and nervous.
Totally. You just know how much you've got to lose. And like you say, it's not necessarily about going back to square one and, you know, kind of just having sex a couple of times. You know, it's about how long that might actually take and the reality of that and whether there will be treatment and that kind of thing.
So, and also when to start thinking, should we start treatment now? You know, because when you've been through sort of fertility treatment once, you don't want to waste time. You know, it's almost, I want to make a decision, so we should get on with it. But then to the same extent, like you said, our firstborn was a spontaneous pregnancy. So do we give ourselves those 6 months, you know, before we start getting stressed, or should we start, you know, straight away? You know, there's lots. I mean, it is scarring. I think that's the only way that you can really explain it.
Yeah, completely. It does. It stays with you forever. And hopefully not forever, but certainly in the baby making years, I guess, for sure. Now, something else that you talk about in the book, and you're really very open about it, and I am grateful for you having been open about it, and I know many, many other people will, is your postnatal depression.
Yeah.
And I'm very grateful this isn't something that I have experienced, but I do know people who have. And one of the things you'd mentioned, it hadn't crossed my mind before specifically. And you talk about having a trigger, and your trigger for your postnatal depression was breastfeeding. And I really wonder if you can talk to me a little bit about that, because I took from what you wrote in the book that, you know, finding the trigger does not solve it per se, but it does give you something to identify and kind of perhaps change. But obviously there is still, and you were incredibly open, which is wonderful, about, you know, the other support that you took on to help you deal with your postnatal depression. If you could talk about that period for a while, that would be wonderful.
Yeah, of course. I mean, so I was that typical pregnant mummy. You know, when I was pregnant, I said, I'm not going to put pressure on myself to do anything. I'll give breastfeeding a go. If it doesn't work, that's not a problem. I genuinely never had an issue with formula feeding in my head. It was never anything like that. But I think the thing is, and I hope no one gets offended when I say this, but I think when you have a baby, when you start breastfeeding, everyone congratulates you. Everyone will say to you, oh, what a good mummy you are. Oh, you're giving your baby your best. You know, you almost feel like you get a round of applause every time you whack your boobs out and breastfeed. And with that comes pressure, because if in your head you're thinking, but I'm not sure about this, or you're feeling anxious, or you're not enjoying it, or, you know, whatever it might be, it's internal pressure, but you've got everyone applauding you. So it feels slightly odd. And I think what happened with me is that I had Rupert. I started breastfeeding. You know, it wasn't easy. I think anyone that says breastfeeding is easy is lying. You know, it's hard. It's definitely hard. But I was very lucky. You know, I had enough milk. We didn't have any problems with latching, you know, all of those sort of things. I think I got mastitis once, which wasn't pleasant, but, you know, apart from that, it all went pretty easily. My problem was, is that I hated it. And it's one of those things that I wish women would talk about a little bit more, because I feel like whenever people say, oh, I'm not breastfeeding, they then feel like they have to justify it. And that could be, oh, I haven't got enough milk. Oh, my baby was tongue-tied. Oh, my baby couldn't latch. They have to justify it. And I feel like women should be able to say, I don't breastfeed because I didn't want to. And my reasons behind that was because I didn't like the feel of it. It felt very alien to me, and it made me feel slightly uncomfortable. I hated breastfeeding in public, so I would quite often shut myself away, or I wouldn't go to a baby group because I was worried in case Rupert needed feeding. It felt very unnatural to me. And lots of people always say, oh, breastfeeding is a natural thing. You know, it felt very unnatural to me. And, you know, I've had some horrible comments on Instagram and things like that whenever I talk about formula feeding, because people say, if you're formula feeding, you're not giving your baby the best, and, you know, you're not a good mummy, and you're being selfish because, you know, you want to bottle feed so that you don't have to get your boobs out, and, you know, things like that. So there is a lot of pressure, basically. And what I realized is that I ticked the whole baby blues at, you know, day 3 to 5 or whatever, and didn't think any more of it. But as Rupert, you know, every day that passed, I was waking up literally dreading the day ahead, and almost sort of like counting down the hours till I could go back to sleep so that that day could be over. And my main trigger, like you say, was feeding. So I would look at my clock and I would think, oh my goodness, Rupert needs to be fed in an hour. And I would dread it and get myself in such a state. And then whilst feeding him, and this is whilst I was breastfeeding him, I would sit there in a sort of darkened nursery by myself because I'd shut myself away. I didn't want anyone to see me breastfeeding. I didn't want anyone to judge or tell me I was doing it wrong. Or I would sit there with tears literally like running down my face. I couldn't look at Rupert because I didn't like that seeing him breastfeeding. It was, you know, people probably think it's weird, I guess, but feeding him was awful. And it was the time that I dreaded and the time that I would cry the most. And so it was definitely a trigger, but it also made me isolate myself a lot. I wouldn't go to baby classes, all the fun things that you're supposed to do. If we had friends coming round, the second Rupert wanted feeding, I would go upstairs and lock myself away. I couldn't bear to do it in front of them. So I became very insular, which isn't my personality at all. You know, I'm quite outrageous and love being around people. So I literally became a shadow of myself, I guess. And it was my husband who started getting concerned. And he said to me, I'm not sure you should be feeling like this. I'm not sure this is just baby blues. This has gone on for quite a bit longer. And so he said to me, let's just go and check with the doctor. You know, let's see what they say. And I spoke to the doctor and absolutely they were like, no, you know, you've actually got postnatal depression quite badly. You have to fill in a questionnaire and stuff. And, you know, I was quite high up on the sort of the risk level, I guess, is what you would say. And you know, I ended up being put on antidepressants. I ended up speaking to a psychiatrist. And when I spoke to the psychiatrist, she just said to me, it's so obvious what your trigger is. It is breastfeeding, you know. And my husband literally said to me, right, that's it, we're stopping. And I was like, I can't stop. I'm going to be so judged and I need to do this. And bear in mind, I'd actually breastfed Rupert for 6 months. So, you know, it was a decent amount of time, but I felt like I had to get to a year or, you know, every month I had put more pressure on myself. And my husband said, no, we're stopping. And I remember feeling slightly resentful to him because I thought, well, you can't tell me to stop. This is my body. You know, I will stop when I want to. And blah, blah, blah. So we just obviously, when you're switching from sort of breast to formula, you need to do it gradually anyway. So we just started doing, you know, the occasional every other feed with formula. And I cannot tell you, when I was formula feeding, suddenly I was smiling at my baby. I was cuddling him. I was being able to feed him surrounded by friends whilst we all, you know, sort of have lunch or supper or whatever. And it was as though my personality just trickled back into me and I became me again. By the time we were fully formula feeding, I was the mummy that I'd always wanted to be. I was the mummy that was smiling, that was happy. Rupert, you know, I think a lot of people sort of say you've got to do what is best for your baby and therefore breastfeeding is best for your baby because that's what the NHS says and all stuff like that. And yes, you know, it has lots of great benefits, but it's not the best for your baby if you as the mummy are not functioning because that baby needs you and they want to see a happy, smiley mummy. And I was not. And I just can't think for any minute that my little baby enjoyed breastfeeding whilst I was waterboarding him with tears. You know, it's like, it's not, you know, it's not nice. So it was 100% the right decision for me. And I think that's the thing is whenever I work with sort of any of my mummy clients now, I live by the motto of you do you. And you really, lots of people have lots of different opinions about how you should bring up your baby and the things you should do and shouldn't do. Actually, in the end, no one knows your baby like you and no one knows you like you. So you have got to do what's right for you, you know. And it took me a while to learn that, but it's been an invaluable lesson now. And
Amazing. Thank you so much. And yeah, you mentioned your mantra in the book and it's so true, isn't it? You do you. Like my one piece of advice that I give out, because I don't really like giving out advice. I'll tell you my experience, but I won't tell you if it's right or wrong, but is listen to everyone's advice and then pick the bits you like and forget about all the rest. Do you know what I mean? Because exactly as you say, you do you. And that is right. And we want happy mummies. We want happy babies. We also want happy daddies, you know? Yeah. And I know you touch on in the book on paternal postnatal depression as well. And I was really pleased personally that you had done that without that sounding incredibly patronizing. I'm sorry if it does. But because again, it's something that isn't talked about a lot. And I did an episode with Dr. Viren Swamy about exactly that, because I think we need to talk about partners, whether they be male or female, and their place and their mental health and the support that they receive as well within all of that.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I had, the particular episode you're talking about was when I had a daddy who sort of phoned me up and he'd heard about what I do as a job. And, you know, you could tell he was very anxious. And he said, oh, I don't know if you're the right person to talk to about this, but I've been to my NCT class and it was all covered, you know, postnatal depression, but it was all about mum. And, you know, so I probably haven't got this and I'm probably fine. And then he just, you know, he revealed to me all those things that, oh my goodness, of course, every father is going to feel, you know, the financial, the pressure. His wife had had a traumatic birth and he was really concerned about her physically and mentally looking after her well-being. He had a newborn that he had no idea what to do with, you know, and it had just all got too much for him. And I think sometimes it's so easy to just concentrate on the mother, whereas dads have got as much, maybe if not even more pressure on them, because, you know, they haven't been through the pregnancy. They haven't been able to sort of adapt and get used to things. You know, they've been there as a support network, but suddenly there's a baby and suddenly their role completely changes. Whereas mums, I think, have a bit longer to get used to it, you know. And also dads have to quite often put on, you know, that manly bravado, you know, everything's fine, which is hard. You know, you're putting on a bit of a mask. And I talk about in my book, you know, I call it like the mother's mask, where you sort of put on an act, you switch into a character and start acting, you know, as the perfect mother and you're absolutely fine, whereas inside you're dying, you know. And I think dads do that as well and probably have more pressure to do that. So I definitely think it should be talked about more.
Yeah, completely, completely. You mentioned there, and actually the mother's mask, and that was when you were at a specific antenatal class. Like, some of the stories in here are, I don't want to say ridiculous, but they're a little bit out there and not necessarily. I know you said that you do see clientele who are kind of quote unquote normal, as in kind of maybe not super rich. I'm going to put it down to a financial thing in some ways, although I'm sure there are plenty of, you know, anyway. but yeah, you have some out there requests that you cater to. Can you tell us about some of the fun ones that you're able to
get? Make it a bit more lighthearted. Yeah, I mean, some of the requests, I mean, I've had a client, and before you judge her for this as well, you have to understand her personality, incredibly outrageous, incredibly wants to laugh at life and have a little bit of fun. And she phoned me up. It was her husband's 50th birthday and she wanted to get him a present. And she was pregnant and she decided that the present that she wanted was a cast of her vagina. And that was basically because she wanted him to remember what it looked like before she gave birth. So, you know, I mean, I never expected to open up my email and have a request like that, I must admit. I did think to myself, my goodness, how am I going to cater for this? But, you know, she had actually herself had quite a difficult experience getting pregnant and had been through a lot. And I think she just wanted to see the fun side of it. She wanted, you know, let's be honest. I mean, it's all those things that mum's worried about. Of course, we're going to worry about whether our vaginas look the same after birth and things like that. You know, whether we talk about it or not, I can guarantee we're all worried about it. And, you know, and this woman just sort of decided to go with it. And, you know, and there we were a couple of weeks later doing exactly that, which I never thought was going to be in my job description. But there we go. Because I work with sort of quite high profile, I guess, you know, people as well. Some of the requests, I mean, I've had some lovely experiences where I actually got flown out to Ibiza and business class to go and baby-proof a client's villa. And I was sent out there 3 days before they were arriving. And my job was to basically set everything up, make sure that, you know, all the nappies were there, all the milk was there. She actually wanted me to baby-proof, even though this baby was a newborn, she wanted me to get things like stairgates and high chairs so that they were all going to be there when the baby grew up. And I got sent out there, as I say, flown out business class. And when I was there, they had their own chef, their own butler, their own driver who just drove me around, cooked me the most amazing meals, basically whilst I just made their beautiful villa perfect for their baby when they arrived. And you know, one of the lovely bits I got to do is I actually went over there with the baby's suitcase full of all these absolutely gorgeous little holiday outfits. And she'd asked me, she told me what they were doing each day of their holiday, you know, whether they were going to some trendy beach bar or whether they were going to a smart restaurant. And I had to work out what outfits the little newborn was going to wear and things like that. So it was almost like a dream come true when it comes to a job, but certainly not the sort of thing your average mummy would do.
Oh, no, but the sort of thing that every mummy would like, no doubt. Just, I've got a 2-year-old now, and we're about to swap rooms. So she's got a little nursery, and we were going to swap her into the slightly bigger room at some point when we get a new bed. And even the idea of baby proofing that, I'm like, can you come round? Can you come give me a hand? I love that idea. I really do. However, I suppose you are still working at the moment, but I wouldn't ask you to get down on your hands and knees and baby proof things, because you are currently just a few weeks off giving birth yourself, aren't you?
Yeah, 5 weeks' time, the baby is due to arrive. So I was laughing actually, because obviously with my job as a mummy concierge, my job is to organise people and, you know, make sure I tell them what baby kit they need, what to pack in their hospital bags. Here am I, the baby's nursery. I mean, I've never seen such a state in my life. I literally do need to sort it out. I haven't packed my hospital bag. That's sort of lying scattered all over our bedroom floor. My husband keeps on saying to me, Tiffany, this is your job. Why can't you do it for yourself? And I'm like, yeah, good point. I will do that soon. actually, I mean, the funny thing, when my little girl Ophelia arrived, she actually arrived a month early as well. So I had nothing ready. I didn't have a hospital bag or anything. And so this time round, I was like, oh, I'll be organised. And here I am, nearly a month away from giving birth and haven't got organised. So I need to kick myself into gear, I think.
Yeah, you need to kind of, yeah, tear a leaf out of your own book and get it done, don't you? Definitely. But I think that that's, well, you know what you're doing, like you say. And for anyone who does kind of rush and panic into an emergency labour, or, you know, it will get there, won't it? All of the bits and pieces. It's nice to be prepared, don't get me wrong, but everything will turn up, you know.
Yes, so. I think my biggest bit of advice is sign up to Amazon Prime, because you can get everything on there delivered the next day. I mean, honestly, I sat in the hospital, you know, ordering nappies and, you know, baby bum cream and everything like that. So.
Yeah, it will happen without question. It will happen. Oh, well, you've got a really exciting time ahead. This is going out a little bit ahead of time, but when people are listening to this, they will be able to run and grab your book, which is called The Secrets of a Mummy Concierge. And it is, I have to say, it is really fun. It's a bit about your story. It's a bit about some of your fabulous clients and the crazy and amazing things that you get involved in for them. And then also some amazing lists, actually, that people can refer to. And that's about, you know, whether it be trying to conceive, whether it be baby proofing, whether all different lists, which is just I thought it was a really, really excellent read. So thank you so much for writing it, and I know that lots of people will get lots of joy from it. So good luck with the launch of that, and also with the birth of your beautiful, no doubt, daughter. So
thank you. Anyone has any baby name suggestions, please ping them my way, because
you're at a loss at the moment. Right, we'll get our thinking caps on. Definitely. Oh, thank you so much, Tiffany, for spending this time with me. I really, really appreciate you sharing your story and the fact that you have been so open about some of really difficult things that people are experiencing and that you've gone through yourself. So it's a really, really special book. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. And I was going to say, one of the things is that if anyone is listening to this and has got that sort of guilt about breastfeeding or formula feeding or anything like that, please message me on my Instagram, which is Mummy Concierge HQ, because I feel for you. I know what it's like. And I think it can feel like you can be very unsupported and things like that. And that's what I want to change. So anything at all, just drop me a message and hopefully I'll help to make you feel a bit better as well.
Amazing. And there will be links to everything in the show notes as well. So thank you so much and take care.
Lovely chatting to you.
You too. Bye-bye.